Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince interrupts me every time I just want to say the damn name. We go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We are a groundbreaking podcast. No other podcast has ever done this. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to have you listening in on our fun and glory. Our guest with us today is one of the most hilarious comedians, or should I say she-larious comedians.
It's like, don't do it. Don't do it.
Frogcast favorite, which is another podcast. Check it out. Allison Stevenson.
Oh, wow. Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Are you happy to be on our new podcast, The Sopranos podcast?
I genuinely am.
Yeah? Yeah? Are you a fan of The Sopranos?
It's fucking weird that you asked me to do this right now because I literally just started watching it.
Oh.
Wow. A month ago.
Wow.
So, and then I got asked to be on. I was like, this is... And you know what's funny, too, is I heard the theme song for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And it was like, got yourself a gun.
Yeah.
And I was like, I kept thinking, like, wait, Pod Yourself a Gun is a thing.
Because
I would
right.
see you guys tweet about it all the time.
Yeah.
But I didn't make the connection for the longest. I was like, why do I keep thinking in my head, Pod Yourself a Gun?
Well, because we have incepted you with our wondrous theme song, which we will play
and
for you.
That means I read your tweets, too.
Oh, thank you, by the way, for actually doing that.
That's a comp. That's the highest compliment.
That really is.
In 2019.
That's like a fave in real life.
Yeah.
And we will play the theme song for you right now.
Oh, great.
Pod. Your mama always said you'd be there. Chosen. Pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
Wow.
Yeah.
I felt the emotion there.
It is one of those things that we've played that theme song, I guess, what, 13? This is our 14th time playing
mm-hmm.
it. And I got to say, the last three episodes that we've done, I've been like, I'm over this joke. But it breathed somehow new life today.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the fact that you watch the show, are a new convert to the show, and now you get the theme song.
Yeah.
Fills me with joy. I'm
Matt,
so glad.
Pod.
It's actually the 15th time we played the theme song. Because
is it now?
This is episode 15, season 2, episode 2.
Oh, interesting. I thought there was only 12 episodes in season 1. Was there 13?
I think last one was 14, this one's 15.
That's crazy. You know what? 13? That's, and I'm just going to go out on a limb here. This is very 2019 of me. That's too many episodes in one season.
For one season?
You know, because
they're really long episodes,
they
too.
They are.
Yeah.
They're a full hour long. And, like, you know, I kind of gotten used to, because I remember 13 being the perfect number back
mm-hmm.
like when Prestige TV first started coming out.
It
was like, you know what's nice about Prestige TV is it's not like 24 episodes a season. You know, it's like they just get straight to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, now we're dealing with a lot of 10 episode seasons.
Or 8 sometimes.
Or 8. And then BBC, they've been doing 6 for a minute now.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Yeah. You know why? It's because British people are lazy. All their shows are just a little bit lazier than ours.
That's right.
Yeah. It's like partly charming the fact that they like care less. And there's like, we take all of ours way too seriously. And everything's like a swooping graphic. And like, everything's like overwrought in American TV. But there's something scruffy and slightly apathetic about British TV.
Yeah, I like that it's all government funded. I like that they don't care. I'm not sure if it's actually all government funded.
I mean, I watched the finale of whatever season of Great British Bake Off was just on Netflix.
Oh, don't say no spoilers. I just started watching.
I won't spoil it. But like at the end, you're like, oh, so what did they win? And it's like, oh, and then they got like a trophy.
Yeah, they don't win shit.
Yeah, there's no prize.
Now they get to eat the cake, I assume.
Yeah. Which is like, it's like well, we won't get too far into that. The reason we're here.
No, wait. I just watched Queer Eye in Japan.
Yeah.
And that's only 4 episodes.
See, they're doing it right. Really, what we want is longer episodes, less of them. What we want is movies. I think that's the way TV should go eventually. Everything just movies. But let's not get into that.
Yeah.
Today, we are talking about season 2, episode 2. And the episode is called Do Not Resuscitate. So, Vince, why don't you read us the synopsis real quick?
When black protesters start picketing at a construction company that
Hard
used to be under Uncle Junior's control, Tony meets with the owner, as well as the leader of the protesters, to fix the problem. Meanwhile, Janice gets sucked into Livia's web.
Yeah, and Livia's like a spider.
She is. She's like a old, crazy spider. So before we get into our general thoughts...
She's a black widow. I was setting you up for that.
Oh, dang it. We are going to take the Wayback Machine way back to January 23rd, 2000, when this episode first aired.
Year.
My God.
Some things that were happening at the time.
The Wayback Machine.
The Tennessee Titans beat the Jaguars in the AFC Championship.
Fascinating.
That's very exciting.
What's that?
It was the same night that the 57th Golden Globes were held. And best drama was American Beauty. Best comedy or musical, Toy Story 2. Best actors, Denzel Washington and Hilary Swank.
So was that for Denzel Washington?
It was for
Training Day?
The Hurricane. And Boys Don't
Cry.
This is
Oscars?
The Golden Globes.
Oh, Golden Globes.
And three television actors that you might have heard of that won awards that night were James Gandolfini, Edie Falco, and Nancy Marchand.
Don't know Nancy Marchand.
She plays Livia.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yes. The center.
Huh. Yeah, she's fantastic.
The center of this episode, the top song in the country was I Knew I Loved You by Savage Garden.
Huh. Do I know that song?
I can't.
How does that go?
Maybe the chorus. Probably know the chorus.
I know that I want to be with you on a mountain. Is that Savage Garden? I think around Y2K, the actual band members of Savage Garden spontaneously burst into flames. just because they couldn't handle the new year,
It was just like, emotional stress.
It was just, you know, basically once the year 2000 rolled around, no more Savage Garden, and Stained became popular.
Yeah, that's right.
The thing.
Well, when they exploded, they left a stain.
They left a stain.
So,
The top movie in the country was Next Friday, the sequel to Friday.
Yeah.
And some of the headlines that were happening that day were prosecutors pursue Bin Laden's web of terror.
Wow, dude, that's crazy because like...
Wow, they didn't even know.
They didn't even know, dude.
Oh,
dude.
Shit.
9/11.
This is a web-heavy episode.
This is a web-heavy. Yeah. We got Livia's spider web. We got the internet web. We got web of terror.
And Russia's acting president, Vladimir Putin, signed an order replacing the commander of Russia's interior ministry troops, which have the main responsibility for clearing Grozny of Islamic militants. So, you know, he was still fighting the war in Chechnya that made him popular.
Yeah, they still
popular.
Have that Chechnya war.
Yeah. So that was what's happening at the time.
Dude, not to laugh at. I don't know why
no,
I laughed.
Please laugh
but...
at the war in Chechnya. Gee, unbelievable. Literally... X amount of people died.
X amount.
Don't know how many. We'll put how many in post. But my righteous indignation is going to stay the same.
Okay,
you know what?
Okay.
One would be too many.
Yeah, and 1,000 never enough.
Wow.
No, that's drugs. Yeah, that's what we say about drugs.
So,
one is too many.
General thoughts on the episode, guys.
Sure.
Allison, you're the guest. Did you have any general thoughts?
Man, you know, it's funny because I recently watched this like a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, I did not remember it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is kind of, I think that's a fair statement about yeah. what this episode is. It's definitely not super memorable. Not a lot really happens, like, plot-wise in terms of, like, moving season two's.
But you can see how it's starting to, like, place the, like, oh, you're going to need to remember this a few episodes
yeah,
from now. Like,
and it felt more like a character study episode that focused on Livia and Janice's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was mostly about Livia's manipulation and Janice's manipulation. Like, both of these are, like, two very manipulative people, and you see very clearly where Janice gets it, you know, mm-hmm. because they're both just like, you know, Janice is very clearly always pulling some sort of grift and
yeah.
like
just gotta respect her for that.
You really do.
I have a lot of respect
for her. I think this is like one of the best, well, I think it's the most subtle episode we've seen, and it's definitely
sure.
the first episode that I had to watch twice before I actually understood what was happening to some extent, because there's like some very, I mean, a lot of the Livia stuff is sort of subtle. I mean,
yeah.
like it's sort of obvious that she has sort of, well, she's sort of conspired to get out of her nursing home. And
right.
then that sort of comes back to bite her in the ass, because now she ends up having to go live with Janice, which she like clearly doesn't want to do. And
yeah.
And so it's like her manipulation's coming back to bite her in the ass. And I think it's funny because, you know, like with the Godfather, like there's this whole history of the mafia being like a metaphor or whatever. Each mafia movie is a little different. Like the Godfather, the mafia was capitalism.
Totally.
And then this one is kind of like the reverse, is where it's like your family is kind of like the mafia, you know, or it's like,
right.
Where Gotti
was like, the government are the real gangsters. And then this
yeah.
one is like, you know who the real gangster was? Your mother.
Yeah.
She's an emotional gangster.
Yeah. Like, seriously, it's all emotional extortion over here.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about it is it is a mother-centric episode about, obviously, one of the most terrible mothers in, like, TV
yes,
history.
Yes, definitely.
And what's funny about it to me is the amount of how much the fact that you have a shitty mother goes against the kind of cultural norms with, like, these, like, East Coast mafioso
right.
Italians.
Mm-hmm.
Because multiple times, as an insult, they refer to people as like motherless cunts
mm-hmm.
or like motherless whatever. They
motherless
just keep
fucks.
Motherless fucks, yeah. And you know, they all know that they would love to be motherless, you know, especially Tony, because like they do not get along.
I mean, isn't that a stereotype though, that like in Italian culture that like men idolize their mothers?
Right, yeah.
And it's like your mother is like the ideal of like the woman you want to marry.
Right, right. It's like the Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
Your mom needs to be this like
Maron.
Mark Maron. who
no,
are your guys?
Madonna, you know
what? Oh. Oh, that's right. That's what Maron means.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, is
like
that
Madonna?
Yeah.
Maron.
I always
is
wonder.
Madonna and Madonna. Whoa, dude.
Oh.
Dude. That's dude, you just blew my mind.
Yeah.
I totally forgot. Yeah. No, it is like part of the cultural series, and they mention it, you know, a bunch. He's got so much shame around the fact that he hates his mom,
mm-hmm.
And that his mother doesn't love him. And even so, like even within this episode, Junior, who is now in jail awaiting trial,
mm-hmm.
Multiple times in this episode is pressuring Tony to bury the hatchet with his mom. Like that's his whole thing. In fact,
yeah.
he seems to find that more important than anything else. Like Tony's like trying to get him you know, up to speed on this contract with the Joint Fitters Union and shit like that. And he's just like, did you do the thing I asked you to
yeah.
do?
Because again, this episode is the family is the mafia. Not like the mafia is like a family. It's like your family is like like the mafia. Like everything in this episode is much less to do with like any of their business schemes than their family dynamics are the mob dynamics, basically.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And like that's I think that's like the basic tension of Tony, is that he like wants to be this old fashioned mafioso guy. He's like torn between wanting to be that and being the kind of modern adult that can admit that his mom sucks and,
right.
Yeah.
And he's like seeking therapy. You know? Like he has this tension between being this old school guy and being a yuppie, which is, I think it's at one point, like when the feds are trying to flip, or when the feds are trying to lean on Big Pussy, he says, "You're going to take orders from this yuppie." So it's
right.
Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got that tension. So I mean, I feel like we should get into Bada B stories before we get too far.
Yeah, let's get into the Bada B stories. So here's what we got for Bada B stories, and we really got to make a sting for this. So Bada B stories, we got the Black Strike. What is that? Shemin Janis?
Skeemin.
Oh, Skeemin. I thought it was. Why did I think it was Yiddish?
Shemin Janis. She's the Shemin.
She's the Shemin. Skeemin Janis, Skeemin Livia, Junior in prison, the owner of Green Grove, Bobby Bacala, gets shit on and fat shamed, and Big Pussy is working with the feds.
Yeah, I guess that's like the two biggest reveals of this episode are, it's like the first time we meet Bobby Bacala, and
who I love.
I know, he's the best.
Yeah.
He's a lovable character in so many ways.
Yeah.
Like not only is he like a big fat lovable dude. Mm-hmm. You just kind of want to hug him. By the way, a little bit of Sopranos trivia. That's a fat suit. He wore a fat
no.
suit. Yes, for the first few seasons he wore a fat suit and then eventually he grew into his fatness.
Oh wow. Yeah. Were they like, did they want him to get fatter? Is it like a Christian Bale sort of a thing?
I don't think they were ever gonna show him without a shirt on, so like he could have stayed whatever weight, but I think they knew.
Wow.
They knew.
They just knew.
They looked at him and said, "He's gonna be a fat fuck. Let's get a fat yeah. suit on this fat."
I was gonna say, is this like the most fat characters we've ever seen, like in a mainstream television show? Like in one episode?
I love that true. Fat representation.
Yeah, got a little representation. Yeah. A little early on, dude. Sopranos.
Body positivity.
Yeah.
I mean, was this episode good for the fats?
Yeah.
Do you think?
Sure. I mean, sure. For men.
Yeah. I mean, at this point in the early 2000s, it was just men who were allowed to be fat on TV.
Although they do insult being fat a lot, too.
They do.
As much as they have fat people on there, they also insult it a lot.
Yeah, that's true. They really don't spend a second actually looking into fat shaming.
Yeah, it's a little bit of one step forward, two steps back, because you got a lot of representation, but they still felt the need to almost go overboard in making the fat jokes.
It's like the movie Tiptoes. It's like, mm-hmm. sure, it's a movie starring a bunch of little people, but they also spend most of the time making fun of little people.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I also love about Bobby is that after the second or third time that Tony has called him a fat fuck.
Hey, we got that clip.
Oh, we got that
clip. Yeah, we got that clip. Roll that beautiful bean footage.
I think it's time for you to start to seriously consider salads.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, get off my car before you flip it over, you fat fuck.
Junior wants to know when.
Tomorrow morning. We're short a couple of guys, so make sure you're there. Consider it exercise.
Fat fuck. You should look in the mirror sometime, you insensitive cocksucker.
I love that so much because he called him insensitive.
Yeah.
Which is the most Bobby Bacala thing because he is a really empathetic person.
Yeah.
And so he's like, to him, just he's abhorrent. Like the fact that someone wouldn't be sensitive to mm-hmm. weight issues is abhorrent to him. Like he's more insulted that, like, wow, you would just say that.
It,
you know,
in many ways it feels to me like he's kind of like Tony 2.0.
Interesting.
Like he's kind of, and it's like interesting to me too that Tony hates him so much.
Yeah
and is so over the top mean to him.
Yeah,
when he's not like that with a lot of other people.
No, yeah, he's like that with Bobby in the show kind of throughout, where he really just treats him like shit. And like, and a lot
I think
of
there's
it,
inherent jealousy there.
There's jealousy because Bobby's kind of chill, Bobby doesn't really make waves, and emotionally he seems to kind of have it together.
Yeah.
And I think he's jealous of that, and he also sees in Bobby the things he hates about himself, which is like weakness or being overweight.
Yeah, sensitivity.
Like, yeah, he's like, to him, he's just a reflection of all the things that he hates about himself. And also he has a close relationship with his uncle, Junior, and that probably pisses him off too.
Right. So I really wanted to get into Livia because I think this is the best Livia episode.
It is.
And I think, and I think we get the most insight into Livia. And Livia sort of inspired the entire show. So in a way, this is kind of like a centerpiece episode of this entire show. Because, you know, it's taking the inspiration of the show and it's really sort of giving us our fullest portrait of Livia, I would say.
Let me just ask real quick. What season are you in right now?
I'm on the beginning of season 5.
Oh, okay. So we're good. I just wanted to make sure you knew what happened.
Yeah.
But as they say you should always begin with a joke. So I thought before we got into that, we would just open with a joke.
A Chinaman goes to see the eye doctor. After the exam, the doctor says, "I know why you're having trouble." Chinaman says, "Why?" Doctor says, "You have a cataract." The Chinaman says, "No, I have a Rinkin Continental." You don't get it?
I get it. He drives a Lincoln.
I mean, it's a good joke.
I love it. He goes, "What?" And then he goes back to reading his magazine. The dude has no time to really converse with anyone, it seems like. Like, especially that whole scene with Junior. He's just like, "I was on TV. I thought I looked bad." And he's like, "You look like you." And then he just goes back to reading the magazine. It's wonderful.
So maybe he's not that empathetic. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point. That's a good point. But maybe he's also very honest and he just didn't want to like lie to the guy, you know? But I'm not really sure. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's not empathetic. I think he is.
He just didn't get the joke.
I think he got it. He just...
maybe he didn't want to laugh because it was insensitive to Chinese people.
Yeah,
very possible.
Yeah.
I see it as being very much a possibility that it was just like, all right.
I mean, it's very much like when you hear like a dad joke, you're like, ugh. Yeah,
and this
like,
show is filled with dad jokes, which is another sting that we need to write.
Right, so
we can do a dad joke section because this one has two of them.
Right.
But
so
before we get into that, go ahead.
So with Livia, and I think this was almost like almost so subtle that you don't necessarily pick up on it. But I was reading one of Matt Zoller's sites, his essays about it at the time, and so like in the episode, like Junior makes a comment to Tony about retirement home owner spreading rumors about Tony.
And thus helped
get him whacked. But so like Matt Zolesites was pointing out that that it could have been like the only person that is Junior's source of information about the retirement home is Livia. So it's quite possible that Livia would have been feeding Junior the information about this retirement home owner to sort of, because at that point she was in this retirement home and she was pissed at Tony for putting her in there. And so she's kind of like, she could have been trying to make it look bad, like, oh, you know, all your deputies are meeting here without you. And now this retirement home owner is going around like spreading your business all around town.
But so, could she have, because at the point at which that was happening where he would like, how would she get in contact? She's in the hospital. He's in prison or in jail.
Before.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So before he was just like, she was like, "By the way, Junior."
Well, they talk. The owner, I mean,
the owner of Green Grove is a snitch.
Well, yeah. Who else would he hear that from?
You know, that's interesting because now that I think of it, in that scene where Janice was mentioning it,
yes,
Livia didn't have any like shock on her face or like any real reaction.
No,
did she?
I have a clip of that because, and that's an important moment because when because Janice is telling Livia that she doesn't need to go back to the home, thinking that she's going to be happy, but Livia is instead like horrified because she realizes now she's going to have to go back and live with Janice, to the point that she does like a weird she chokes on her food because she realizes that she's like choked on her own manipulation in that scene.
Interesting.
I have that clip of Livia finding out, which I think
play that clip.
Yeah.
So, Ma, you're going to be getting out of here soon. Want to go home?
Home?
Back to the house?
My house?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't think so. I'll go back to the other place.
To the nursing home? No. That's for people who don't have anybody to look after them.
Oh, it's not that bad. And they give you fresh towels every day.
Barbara said you hated it.
But it's too much trouble.
Now, Ma, you can't go back there.
Why not?
Because it's dangerous there.
What are you talking about?
The owner is missing. Mr. Capuano, they suspect foul play. Yeah. Ma, you okay?
Like, she's choking because she's realizing that the very reason that she can't go back to the place she actually wants to go back to is because of a rumor that she started in the first place.
Yeah. Mm. Do you think... So you think she actually did want to go back?
Yes. I don't necessarily think
at this
that
point
she definitely prefers it to living with her crazy ass daughter who she knows isn't going to take care of her at all. Like,
you might be right. I just to me, it seemed like another theory is that she's just gets off on withholding things from her children, especially when she can sense any kind of like thirstiness. Like, she could tell Janice was thirsty for the house in one fashion or another. Like, she knew at the very least that she just wants to live someplace.
Like, she just wants
free.
The opposite of what the kids
right. So she
want to give her.
She purposefully wants to do the opposite just to fuck with them.
But she's so selfish. I think this is more about like her own living situation. Like, when she would talk to the kids about the retirement home, she would always make it like it was the worst place ever. But then, but then when Tony would ask like where she is, and the people that run the home are like, oh, she's in water aerobics class, or she's made lots of friends. Like, there was this level of she was having
true.
A much better time there than she was letting on.
Yeah, she might have actually wanted to go back. But I'm just thinking, had there been a scene where Tony had said, or anyone else was like, hey, aren't you excited to go back to the nursing home? There's no way she would be like, yeah. She would then go back to that place where I'm going to die. She loves saying the opposite. Well, despite her feelings.
She doesn't want to give anybody satisfaction.
She doesn't ever want to give people satisfaction.
Yeah, she thrives on giving her children guilt.
Yeah, yeah, she lives for it. She's a martyr, and this is...
Are we sure she's not Jewish?
No, but she is definitely, like, at one point she even points to her hand in the hospital when Janice comes in and goes, you see my hand? It's all black and blue from where they stuck the needle in. And part of me is like, is she... like literally talking about like in her mind, does she think that's stigmata? Like, does she does she think that's this is where the Jews drove the nails through my hands?
Yeah,
like in a way that's it's just all part of her martyr syndrome, where she's just like she has to be dying on a cross and people need to appreciate it.
I just thought that entire storyline was incredibly rich and nuanced.
Yes. It is the best Livia episode, and like it's also and it's only the second Janice episode, but it's also one of my favorite Janice episodes because like you're seeing like two behemoths in the world of emotional manipulation.
Behemoths?
Like, fight Yeah.
They're like the Bohemian word, right? Behemoths. They're like behemoths that drink coffee and smoke.
No, I'm talking about like two
write poetry.
Two giants.
Okay, behemoths.
Isn't that... What did I say?
You said bohemoths.
Bohemoths.
What's the word?
Behemoths.
Is it behemoths?
It's behemoths.
Wow. Well, I'm embarrassed.
Oh. Embarrassed, you mean?
Oh, I am embarrassed.
We're not even, we haven't even gotten to malapropism corner yet, but
I
here
guess
you are.
I did the first one. Mike Maron. Two behemoths. Of like emotional manipulation, and like going at each other. Like what I really loved was when she's trying to manipulate Livia and she's not having it. And she's like, I know what you want. You want to live in my house and you're trying to take it from me. And it's like, she hasn't even said anything close to that, but she already sees mm-hmm. right through her bullshit. Yeah.
Well, Janice is fairly transparent.
She is, but then... She shows up with fucking like Italian candies and Pavarotti playing
Mario Lanza,
Mario Lasagna.
Yeah, that's right.
and starts and like gets her like for a bit for that scene. It was like, oh damn, she did it.
Yeah,
she like actually was able to manipulate Livia. It was kind of impressive.
Yeah.
So
a question I had with Janice. Janice is weirdly the butt of numerous blowjob jokes in this episode. Like they are sitting at the table at one point and Tony's says, oh, I forgot, you don't eat pork in that way.
In that way.
Which is a weird kind of bad blowjob joke.
Oh, it's a very bad one.
And then later he's doing that, like he is blowing cigar smoke like he's sucking a dick, and she
I missed that,
and she gets mad at him as if it, in both cases it seems like he's referring to something in Janice's past. And then later in the episode Livia comes up with some story about how she sold her ballet slippers to buy meth. Like, are they trying to imply that Janice was some like louche prostitute at some point in her life?
I mean, I think that for her super Catholic Italian ass family, like she had boyfriends. Mm-hmm. And if you're, you know, they knew, you know, this is like them being adolescents. So if you had a boyfriend when you're in high school, everyone would be like, oh, you probably sucked his dick.
Or is it just Tony's thing that he likes to clown on people for giving oral sex?
I think he's the kind of guy, you know, like, and that's like a thing where you like, each person has like the jokes that you make about them.
Yeah, totally.
Like Bobby, he's fat. He gets all the fat jokes.
Yeah, right.
Like Janice, she fucks. She gets all the blowjob jokes.
Yeah. And Junior, he's old. He gets all the looking like fucking Larry David jokes. Like,
but I think there was like a specific point to putting like two and a half to three blowjob references about Janice in this one episode.
It's weird to do that, and if there's a backstory, like not even bring that up or explain it.
But that's why I think this episode is one of the subtlest, because like, but like if you add those two jokes to like the weird meth comment, you get this like vague picture of Janice's background, and you're wondering what it means.
Hey Vince.
Hey Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, now you're the man of the house.
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself. mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I mean, it makes sense, though. I mean, it's like you don't really have to put the pieces together. You don't have to know the backstory to know, like, everything it says about the relationship mm-hmm. that they have and, like, what drove her to eventually, like, leave the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, obviously her lifestyle and the family's lifestyle clashed. So it's just kind of like, you know, it's clear she does drugs. She, like, she parties, she fucks, she...
yeah.
You know, is into like new agey bullshit.
She's yeah. the least Italian.
I actually have a question.
She does the most oral sex, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, that's probably what it really is.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to give anything away.
Oh, you
you're
can,
out
you
there
can
in California putting your mouths on each other's privates.
Yeah.
You're doing like the French do with your lips on people's penises.
By the way, I love that episode. It was a big deal that Junior ate pussy.
Oh, so good.
Like, why can't we talk about that episode?
It's
but anyway.
Such a good episode.
No, but it was interesting to me in this episode, Olivia mentions that Janice doesn't have any kids.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
But yeah. We later find out that she does have a kid.
Oh, right. Harpo. Harpo?
Harpo?
I don't know. That's in a future episode that I haven't gotten to rewatch recently, so...
Yeah, I thought they mentioned...
I recently saw it, which is why when I rewatched this, I was like, wait a minute. Does Livia...
Livia maybe doesn't
know... Doesn't
know
that Janice has a kid?
Oh, totally.
Or she did the writers fuck that up?
No, she totally doesn't know. Because if she knew, Livia would never stop bringing it up.
Yeah.
I bet you that Livia just doesn't know that she has had the same kid out of wedlock.
But
I
Tony
have that
does.
Clip if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't know the kind of man your father was.
What do you mean?
Nobody knows.
Well, this is also, I think this is also an interesting clip because Livia does this weird thing where she references people not knowing about her husband, who she's always referred to as a saint before this.
Right, right.
And then right as she's about to get into it, she dissembles again and she like goes back to her possibly fake dementia thing, so...
Nobody knows what I went through.
What about Daddy?
One thing I could tell you would kill him to see me now.
Here's your ice cream, Mrs. S. Then we can take our walk.
Leave me alone, please. To open the window and just push me out. I can't take this anymore.
Mrs. Soprano, what's wrong? What happened?
She just started crying.
You, I know why you're here. You're going to fool me for a second. You're here because you want to take my house.
Ma.
You don't know what goes through this mind of mine.
Well, that's for fucking sure.
Someday, I hope you have children of your own and they treat you like this. I gave my life to my children on a silver platter.
This is bullshit.
Yeah, she doesn't know.
Yeah.
That like Harpo is a secret.
But it's that weaponized.
Are we confident that's the name?
I'm like 90% sure it's Harpo.
Wow, Harpo. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But I just feel like that weaponized self-pity is a big part of Livia's character and it's so perfect.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I love, and this is kind of a throwaway thing, but before Janice comes to visit her, she's like eating tapioca and she's just like please see if you have anything else. I can't eat this trash.
Mm-hmm.
And then Janice comes in and she's like, oh, hey, Mom. Janice, oh, would you like some tapioca?
Yeah.
She's such a piece of shit. Because like any good mother would be like, don't eat that. It's trash. But, you know, there's just like this deep-seated hatred that Livia has for her children that is just so wonderful to watch.
Yeah, I still feel like I don't hate her. Like, I know she's a bad woman, but I still feel for her in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah, she's a bad mom. But, like, actually, that scene said, I think, more to me about her relationship with Johnny, her husband, than I think anything else in the show. The whole, like, he's a saint, like, that whole thing has been going on, you know, the entire time. But this is the first time you actually ever hear her be like, you don't know what it was like. And honestly, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for sure.
I mean, she flirts with, like, an introspective moment there. And then.
Oh, there we go.
And then she completely pulls out of it.
Yeah. But it's interesting because, like, of the fact that, you know, that everyone else, like, including Tony, is like, oh man, Livia wore the pants, you know, whittled him down to a little nub. He was a squealing little gerbil when he died. And all I can think is, like, that's probably not the case. The relationship was probably hell of abusive. And, like, you know, she was probably abusive to him, but I'm sure he was mega abusive to her. I mean, you know, all the gumars and, like, you know, the late nights in strip clubs and shit like that, but also possibly physically abusive, possibly.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, I think this fits into the context of all mob movies, right? Because,
right,
you know, in every mob movie, there's like an abusive, like like the main character is the gangster who is abusive to the women in his life, but there's always like a sweet mother character, you know, like James Cagney just mushing fucking grapefruits
cake
in his girlfriend's faces, and then
and
then you got like Joe Pesci in Goodfellas, but there's always like a sweet mother who's making them food and is being all nice. And I think The Sopranos is kind of like an extension of that in a way, where it's asking, like. But in one sense, it's David Chase being like, well, I didn't have like a sweet mother character like all these mob movies.
Clearly.
And in another sense, it's basically just a continuation. Like, okay, so that was the sweet mother was one generation. And then the next generation is this woman who probably got a grapefruit shoved in her face by Jimmy Cagney. Like, what did she turn out like, and how did she treat her kids?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's clear that Livia was in an abusive relationship with Johnny, and I think that said a lot. You know, just her saying you don't know what it was like and whatnot, she clearly has like a lot of secrets about like shit that went on between them.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it, you know, it explains some of the behavior. And that's the thing, I don't hate Livia, I just know she's someone who should have never had children. I feel for her, because,
or who definitely needed to be on medication a long time ago.
She needed to be on some meds. Possibly she should have sold her own ballet shoes for meth. That could have helped.
Yeah,
you never know.
Could have. Yeah.
Okay, so how about the big pussy reveal? Because
big
up until
pussy.
This point,
hey, I got a big pussy. I wish she had just.
I
said
love
that.
A big pussy reveal.
Why do they call him big pussy?
They should call it small penis. Sorry. I don't have a big pussy. You just have a little dick. Hey, I'm walking here. All right, I'm sorry. This show is mostly offensive to Italians.
Up until this point, like, we weren't sure whether
right.
Big Pussy was talking to the feds or not. And then in this episode, find out, turns out that he is in the form of Skip, who's like a great character because he's like a fat Italian guy with a lisp, which like a fat, tough guy Italian with like a sensitive guy lisp is just a great combination.
It is. It's very nice. And also, they do a great thing where they flip it on you. So as you're watching it for the first time, you see him in the hospital, you know, having some sort of like back procedure done. And he's being picked up by some who you think is just some stoolie. And so you go, oh, okay, so he really did have back problems.
Yeah, big pussy's getting it blown out the back walls.
Yeah, all right. Hell yeah, dude. Blow up big pussy's back walls. Yeah, know what I mean? High five, Allison.
Oh, no. My big pussy can't handle it.
But yeah, so, but then immediately after the scene after he's in the car in the passenger's side seat, and it is clear that he is an FBI informant. I did like Skip's use of Jimmy took the pill for you, which is, I guess, his way of saying that the pill was a bullet to the fucking back of the head.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is revealed. And I think I remember at the time, I already knew all this, like, because I didn't start watching The Sopranos till like season 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
Or like season 6.
Yeah, I don't remember if I saw this exactly in order either.
Yeah, so I knew that, like, you know, Big Pussy was definitely the rat. But yeah, I imagine
and
it must have come as somewhat of a shock to people who saw it for the first time.
Yeah, and I think Skip is finding the crack in Tony's persona. Like, mm-hmm. he's finding mm-hmm. the root of Tony's character, and he's trying to drive a wedge between him and Big Pussy.
I call him a yuppie and shit.
Yeah, so I got a clip of that.
Jimmy Altieri ate the pill for you. Any suspicion about being an informant went to the grave with Jimmy Altieri.
Yeah, yeah. And I know Tony 30 years, not this.
Spammy, okay? You've been on our tits since 98. Fucking chauffeur service to and from the doctor that we had a fine for you. We're gonna let you back on the streets and earn. We want results. This fuck tried to suffocate his own mother, Sal. Huh?
Disgraziato.
His own uncle wanted him whacked. You said so yourself. He's been shitting on you for years.
I know what I said.
Plus, he's been crying to a shrink twice a week. You don't know this man, Dick. So don't sit there and tell me you're going to take a bullet for some yuppie who thinks you're his errand boy.
So, you know, brilliant
on Skip's part.
Yeah, yeah. Skip is good. He's good at playing people against each other. He's like a Janice in his own way, or Olivia.
Aren't police the real Janice?
Or just a cop?
Yeah, dude, all cops are Janice. Hashtag abolish
ICE. That's mean to Janice.
Yeah, that is mean. That is mean. Janice, though, for me personally as a character, rubs me like I think I know people. There are people in my life who are exactly like Janice.
Yeah.
I'm just like, so every time I watch her character, I'm like, God, I know these people so well. Like,
yeah.
It's like a trigger for me. But yeah. Okay. So this was another thing I noticed from that scene. He asked him if he had actually, you know, been to visit Tony yet. And he said no. So he is actually playing both sides at this point.
Right.
Like which is crazy because it was also the first time I had rewatched it and saw that there's that scene where Bobby Bacala shows up to like the office in the Bing, and Tony starts just saying out loud all of the like splits between him and Junior. And he's like, you know, 60-40 on the joint fitters union, and then, you know, 50-50 on the coke. Like, he just says it out loud, and like Pussy is standing right beside him. And I was thinking at the time, like, oh, fuck, like he's got him, you know, on fucking video, on voice recorder saying this shit. But then I realized he's not yet wearing a
wire.
Not wearing a wire yet. He hasn't even told the FBI that he is seeing the, you know, hanging out with the family.
He's
yet.
Still morally conflicted at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Over whether or not he truly wants to.
Yeah, like, you know, be a snitch.
Yeah.
Be a fucking snitch ass rat. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a big surprise for me because I already knew that he was a snitch, and I knew that he, spoiler alert, got whacked. People who listen to this podcast, we assume you've seen it. All right?
It's been 20 years.
It's been 20 goddamn years, dude.
Wow. Yeah, I guess
isn't
it
that
has.
Crazy?
Shit.
But yeah, so I don't know. What are your thoughts about that storyline?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good plot line. And again, I think it fits with the subtlety of the episode because, like, if you didn't remember in the last episode that Big Pussy had already met with Tony, Like, you kind of have, like at this point in the show, they're expecting you to remember everything. Like, they're not holding your hand with every plot point. Like, you wouldn't necessarily pick up on the fact that he's trying to play the Fed if you didn't remember the last episode perfectly. Oh my God. So,
just the business stuff on this show. Like, yeah. I still don't understand what they do and how they make money. And I'm on like episode like 50. Like,
yeah.
That goes into the strike at the construction site, which is another interesting.
And I think I get it now. And
every time they say no work, I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. No show. It's like, it's just phantom employees. And you collect a union check on people who don't even show up to work.
Right. So I think what happened there was that Tony with the union and the Reverend guy are colluding to shut down this construction site to take a certain number of no-show jobs. Like they'll let them start up construction again if this construction guy puts, you know, X number of people from each organization on his payroll, and then they'll let construction happen again.
That's what I got. And I never noticed that. I thought he just like paid him off to stop the strike.
Right.
For the longest time. And then finally on this go around, I was like, oh, okay. So what had happened was the white dude who runs that construction site is like, Tony, I need your help. There's black people striking.
So they're playing him.
So Tony colluded with the Reverend to get the strikers to strike. Or they're not even striking. They're just protesting because none of them actually work on the construction site.
Yeah, and they're stopping people from entering the construction site, I think.
Right. So knowing full well that he'll go to Tony to be like, hey, can you send some tough guys to rough people up? And then he goes to the doctor's office to pay off, you know, with that envelope where he like very unslyly slides an envelope in the middle of a magazine.
Yeah.
And that money was to number one to pay the big bad boys to bust heads of the protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And that money they're splitting, and then somehow
he's paying Tony to stop the strike by busting heads, but instead of busting heads, Tony is just making a deal with this guy he's had a deal with all along to take a certain amount of the no-show jobs. And so
But does he up the amount? Does the construction head of construction up the amount of no-show jobs?
I think that is what we're led to believe, because Tony's like, hey, I'm going to need something to bust up the strike.
Oh, I'm going to need some money, and I'm going to need more no-shows.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah, no, that was the first time that I ever got what was going on. And that happens a lot in this show, where like a lot of the stuff, whenever there's scenes where they're like discussing stuff, all I hear is hey, so did you gabagool the Maldon?
And they don't explain shit.
Yeah, did you finuke the... it all just sounds like Mario Lasagna to me. But I know they're discussing, you know, big deals. And, you know, and that's, you know, yeah, there's apparently a whole extortion network that he has by using this reverend and his, congregation of black radicalized people who are all being taken advantage of, which is kind of an interesting, it's a very, I think, year 2000s look at activism a little bit, where it was kind of like
very cynical,
very much like, all these black people are just doing it to get more money. Like, like, not again, David Chase, please come on this show and tell us that it ain't so. David Chase, big fan, big listener of the show, has listened. And
Saying David Chase is a big fan. Okay.
Huge fan. He may not like the show, but it doesn't matter because we're doing it anyways. It did feel a little bit cynical. It did feel a little bit like Al Sharpton is a charlatan.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I heard my dad going like, they're all a bunch of thieves. Right. Like in my head.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about the guy who plays the elder reverend, Bill Cobb, who is an actor that I love.
Yeah.
He's so good in everything, and he's been in a ton of different things.
Is he still alive?
He is still alive. So,
damn, dude.
Fun piece of trivia. He was supposed to be 83 in the show.
Yeah.
He's actually 85 now.
Damn.
Which means in the show, he would have been about 65 or 64-ish.
Which means black do crack.
Well, he was supposed to be a young looking 83,
just at a slower rate.
Wow, it's a slower crack.
It's a slower process.
But it do, don't it? No, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. I remember thinking
he actually didn't start, according to his Wikipedia page, he didn't start acting until the age of 36, which is pretty great. He kind of like moved out.
He does look very familiar.
Yeah,
he's been
I've seen
in
him
a
in
million
stuff.
Things.
Yeah, I can't. He's like one of those character
can't
actors.
Can't pinpoint it, but
yeah,
you know,
I can't pinpoint
you've seen him
it,
in
but
stuff.
I know he said something wise.
Yeah, he plays a guy who says wise things. He's great, and the first line of his Wikipedia page, sadly, is not to be confused with Bill Cosby.
Jesus. God. Very much not to be confused.
Yeah.
Very, very much. Also, if you do confuse him, you're probably racist.
He's been in A Night at the Museum. He's been in...
That's what it is.
Oz, the Great and Powerful. He has been in The Muppets. He has been in...
of those. I'll tell you for certain it's none of those.
I'm probably thinking of something so stupid, like a shitty
Hope
sitcom
Floats,
that was only one
Sunshine
season.
State.
I have seen Hope Floats, but I don't remember.
A Mighty Wind.
I have seen Hope Floats.
I've seen Hope Floats, too.
He was in Lost.
Lost.
6 Feet Under.
Yes. All of those I know him from.
Yeah. He's been in a lot of stuff. Great actor, anyway.
He's a great actor. It's too bad they killed him off in this episode after introducing him.
Right. Yeah, they didn't give him
much
time.
That was a very, like, what was that scene? What was the point of that scene?
I really don't know. I think
there's a sub motif about aging, like
the whole joke
with Junior in the doctor's office. He's my father told me never get old. I should have taken his advice. He's worried about how he looks,
and also about like the elder dying. It's supposed to be like when the elder dies, that means you're the elder,
right.
And so later when Junior falls in the shower, he's like he wants to help him because. He's like, no, I can't be the elder. And not just in kind of like a figurative sense, but also in like a FBI sense where he's like, you need to be alive because you need to be the lightning rod for the FBI. They need to think that you are the boss of this family.
Which leads to him actually carrying him out. Like the last shot is him carrying Junior off into the distance because he's like, hey, I'm carrying you so that you don't die so that I don't have to do this shit.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. In that scene where he talks to the very old man, the Reverend's father, there's a moment that I can only describe as, to me, felt like a very 90s moment. And I could be wrong. This could be more. But I want to get to our section of It's the 90s. So do we want to get there?
Sure.
Let's do it. Play that sting, baby.
Oh, I got the sting?
You always have the sting.
It's the 90s. Parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s. You're my butterfly,
sugar. 90s. Hell yeah. So in that scene, you've got what I can only describe the point of that scene is, yeah, sure, the aging stuff you said, but also as just a vehicle for one of the most obvious Coca-Cola product placements I've ever seen. it was just, that level of product placement, I think, was kind of ubiquitous back in the day. It was like, especially with the beginnings of like prestige TV, you know, no commercials and whatnot. They were like, well, we still got to make some
money.
Advertising money.
Yeah.
And it was just this very annoying long shot of him drinking a can of Coke where you can see in full view Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, that's very 90s.
Makes me want to have a Coke right now.
Mm.
They didn't talk about it, though.
Yeah, they didn't. They just got to show it. It made me want to have a Coke. Then also, Janice at one point just tells Tony, oh, you're so left brain. which is a very 90s thing.
Yeah.
Like, no one talks about left brain, right brain anymore. Now it's all fucking Myers-Briggs. Like, I am such an
INFJ. It's every fucking Tinder profile.
Yeah, it's every Tinder profile now is just Myers-Briggs. But, like, if Tinder had been around in 1999, it would have been like, I'm left brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, or I'm right brain.
I'm from Mars and I'm left brain.
Yeah, I'm from Venus and I'm right brain. We'll never get along. another thing was the constant shout-outs to the History Channel being some sort of groundbreaking cable network.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was actually shows about World War II, and now it was a history channel about history.
Yeah, it
wasn't about ancient aliens and shit.
Yeah. Or like fishing in Alaska.
Or fishing in Alaska, or dangerous truckers or some shit.
yeah.
And then also, and this gets into, I think, another storyline, but the kind of like weird obsession with DNA as being like this new science that was happening. Right. This is a very DNA heavy episode in terms of talking about it.
That's so interesting to me because I've seen so many, like literally before starting Sopranos, I watched Criminal Minds.
Oh, yeah.
And you know from those shows, which we've all been inundated with, they can find out who murdered someone.
Yeah, right.
Literally with like a little tiny piece of that person's DNA.
Yeah.
And so many murders, like they get away with so many murders on this show.
Yeah.
And none of them get investigated. And I'm like, these guys are leaving DNA everywhere.
Yeah, all they do is leave DNA around. They're like shooting people.
They're never wearing gloves.
Yeah. Like brains are splattering on things. Like the only assumption is that this was a time where like, yeah, there was DNA existed. As like there was DNA science, but it just, you know, the mob hadn't caught up yet. I think nowadays it's probably a little bit harder to do a mob killing, but then again,
you can't get away with murder in this day and age.
Well, unless it's Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah,
true. Unless you've got a lot of power.
That's right. Pod yourself a Jeffrey Epstein.
You need a cabal of high profile pedophiles to get away with murder.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you can do it in plain sight and have no one talk about it on the mainstream media. So the DNA thing I thought was interesting because at first I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it's just kind of a thing that people talked about. But then I realized how clunky the entire DNA like thread is in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
The entire reason that DNA is brought up multiple times is just so dumbass AJ Soprano can confuse DNR with DNA and talk to his mother like, what's DNR? I know about DNA, but they said you need a DNR, you know, in case you go into a coma. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just confused. Like,
What was up with that?
The obvious weak spot of this episode for sure.
Junior is showing signs of being kind of like manipulative, like,
because he
did the same thing when he like talked about his dad being in therapy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he's like showing signs of like Janice, Livia-esque.
Yeah, Anthony Jr. is like one of those kids who like you just assume he's just a moron,
yeah,
and that's why he's such a snitch. But by the way, he is a snitch,
yeah,
because one of the things in this episode when Meadow drops him off at the hospital and is like, I'm gonna go up to the eating disorder ward to check on in on Hunter, he goes like, no, we're supposed to stick together. He's like, it's just gonna be a minute. And he goes, well, I'm gonna tell. Because he's a fucking snitch.
Yeah.
So AJ is a snitch, and he may not even mean to be a snitch half the time, but half the time he does. And that's why he's a goddamn rat.
He also tells half of a joke in this episode.
He does. And we need, I think, together as a podcast to figure out the punchline.
I know what the punchline is.
Oh,
what?
I know what Reddit thinks the punchline is.
Okay. So what's the setup?
What did one prick say to the other prick?
Okay, so I was just thinking about this, and I was trying to think, it would be like, why the long head? No, hold on. I assume it's two dicks talking to each other, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what did one prick say to the other prick? Where's your hoodie? Because hold on, we can do this.
Is it a pun? Can you give us a hint?
Is it a pun? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Prick. I mean, in a way, yes. Prick.
What did one prick say to the other prick?
Nice to beat you?
Oh, nice to beat you is good.
You can't beat your prick with your prick.
I mean, I guess you could. Are you looking forward to the new perennium? Like millennium.
I get that.
Okay, hold on.
Prick to other prick.
You're not going to get it. Can I just tell you?
Why do you keep throwing up? Come. How come you keep throwing up?
That's it. Just how come?
Yeah. What did one prick say to the other prick? Nothing. They were both stuck up cunts.
Oh.
That's pretty good.
I mean, yeah, it's all right. I mean, it's like weird you're calling a prick and a cunt at the same time, but
yeah. I love how they're like, "Whoa, well, let's not say penis or dick or cock. Let's call it prick."
Yeah.
But let's call it a pussy a cunt.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right. Okay, so that's what it was. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, I think nice to beat you was better. I think that was the best one. Nice to beat you. I love that.
Well, you know.
You know, you're a comedian. Yeah. This is what you do.
You're saying I should have been writing on The Sopranos?
The whole time.
Yeah.
They really do. I mean, you know, they could have used a female writer. I think they had like two.
Yeah, I could see that.
You can tell watching it. Episode.
Oh, she probably wrote
She wrote that joke.
Oh yeah, Robin Green. She's it's like her and there's another one. There's literally like two. But yeah. So let's see. What else?
I thought that was a good note to go out on, the prick joke.
Okay, cuz I personally didn't have any malapropism corners, did you?
Well, there was the Mario Lasagna guy.
Yeah.
And then Bobby Bacala saying to the victor belongs the spoils.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that, well, so what is that?
He meant to say baloney?
Yeah, no, I think it's just, well, it's like a...
To the victor belongs the baloney.
It's only a slight malapropism, because I always thought it was to the victor go the spoils, but apparently it's to the victor belong the spoils, but I don't know.
Oh, so he said it right.
Just oh, he actually
he added
said
an
it right?
S on belong kind of makes
yeah,
it...
Yeah, he had, right, he added an S. Yeah. And so Mario Lasagna is, who is that supposed to be?
It's Mario Lanza.
Oh, okay. I kind of like, for some reason, I pictured like, just like, hello, it's me, I'm Mario Lasagna. And like, he was just going to sing like, you know, very Italian-y. Anyways.
I meant to find an explanation for why people on the East Coast say Mario, but I didn't get that far.
Yeah, we'll never know, I guess. But we'll leave that.
Mario
Lasagna. We'll leave that for another time. I think great episode all around. Forgettable, but upon rewatching and honestly upon your explanation, Vince, it is a really good episode.
Yeah,
it's just one of the more subtle episodes that like really does a kick-ass job at developing all the characters.
Yeah. And I will say it was kind of the first episode where you see like Junior being a comical character.
Yeah.
And it's going to be amped up more and more.
Oh yeah.
This was like the start of that.
He gets more Mr. Magoo.
Yeah.
As it goes on.
Which I love.
I love too. I love watching Junior just kind of like waddling around trying to figure shit out and like losing his mind a little bit. It's a lot of fun. Him falling. Love watching him fall. Every time he falls, I laugh. What does that say about me? I don't know. Probably that I'm a bad person. Allison Stevenson, thank you so much for on Pod Yourself a Gun. Where can we find you?
Oh, I'm on Twitter at justaboutglad. You know, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Just go there and then...
Instagram?
Instagram, justaboutglad.
And tell us about the adultswim.com.
Oh, yeah. It's a website.
Yeah. I, too, follow your Instagram and your Twitter.
Well, so. Yeah, I got a little web show called The Perfect Women.
Yeah.
On Adult Swim Streaming.
Who books that?
Right. I'm kidding.
Me. No. But yeah, you
Check
guys should
out.
Watch it. It's
the
called
Perfect
The Perfect Women.
On adultswim.com.
We're very dumb and stupid, so if you like that.
I love dumb and I love stupid.
But
and
in
I
a fun way.
All of the women on that show are very, very funny. Please check it out. Vince, why don't you put out that Google Voice number for anyone out there who has a comment or a suggestion or a criticism?
415-275-0030.
Frotcast@gmail.com for any questions or concerns that you don't want to say with your voice. And patreon.com/frotcast if you want to donate and listen to our other podcast, the Film Drunk Frotcast, which is a fantastic show about movies. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And until next time, don't stop believing. You'll get that joke.
Eventually. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.